So our speaker today is someone you all know very well. He's a man who really needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyways. When he speaks at chapels, it's always very exciting because you never know what you're going to get. Chapel could end with Keezer holding a bag of manure. Or this guy might say something that could get him fired. So it's always exciting. And that is none other than Dr. Steven Sanders. Please give him a round of applause.
The applause like died immediately. I also like how Dr. Creamer's here, even though I don't think he's a junior or a senior. I think that might go back to I could get myself fired. I want to open in prayer, though. So bow your head. And we'll do it a little differently here. I want you from your seat to invite God into the room here. He is here, but I want you to ask him to help you feel his presence here today. I want you to now pray for yourself that you would be focused, that whatever he's doing in the room right now, that you would be attuned to, that you would have whatever he has for you. Pray for the rest of the room. Pray for the people in here that whatever God has here in the middle of the week, that we would all be able to listen to that. And then I ask you to pray for me, that I would be focused, that I would have the words that I need to have. There's been a lot going on, obviously, with the start of the year that I pray that I would be able to say what it is that be the mouthpiece for what it is that God has for us. Father, we do love you. We ask you to be here. We thank you for your presence with our school, and we pray that you would be here on a Wednesday. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Okay, so this has been like a super, super busy time for me personally because our daughter Kate is switching schools like this year. Like last year or last week was her first week at a new school. And this is obviously a big deal. It's always a big deal. But for her, it's a super big deal because she started going to her old school when she was like two because they had like a daycare. And so there's never a time that she can remember at this point. She's 11, be 12 next week. She doesn't remember a time she wasn't going to her old school. And so it's like a huge life change. And because of this, like, it's brought up a lot of different things. Like her old school was an elementary school and it was run out of a church. It was co-ed. Her new school is K through 12. It's specifically a all-girls school. It's just like a different thing. Her old school, again, it was part of a church. It wasn't very big. Like, I myself knew where every room was pretty easily by the time she had turned three. This school is a lot larger. Like, it's got a bigger campus probably even the Criswell has. And so it's been different. Another difference is, so she's in sixth grade now, but in fifth grade, her whole class, which was like 12 students, like that was the whole fifth grade, you know, they would have rotating teachers, things like that, but they stayed in their room and the teacher would come to their room. This year, her class is like 80-something girls who she didn't really know, and they have eight classes, but they have like a schedule that I don't even completely understand the schedule. Like, I think you like need a degree to be able to understand her schedule. It's like there's even days and there's odd days and the classes rotate, and even in the evens and all, like Dr. Brown is nodding here. Like, she's the only one who would understand this. So I don't even know how Kate knows where she's supposed to be. Like, I get her there around 7:50 and then I'm done for the day on that. You know, from there she takes it. She's supposedly gets where she needs to go. So the whole thing is like this huge transition. But it's also a big transition for me and Danielle because, you know, we had gotten used to what carpool drop-off looks like. We had gotten used to who the kids in her class are. Kate's got a birthday party a week from Saturday, and like we're having like for the first time in years and years, maybe ever, we're having more of a discussion of like who we're inviting, you know, because used to she could invite the whole grade. Now, you know, we can't invite 80 girls, you know, and she doesn't even know all of them. And so just little things, even the temporary things, have become more of a discussion. Like, we're not on autopilot. And then there's the bigger issues, you know, and one of the bigger issues, this may not seem like a big issue, but like as a parent, this is a huge issue now, is that now in sixth grade, Kate has her own computer. So before this, they had computers at the school, but it was like one of these, like they had 12 students. So the school had 12 laptops. They'd check them out to the kids, and then they would just leave them at school all the time. And Kate, you know, our family has an iPad. You know, Kate's seen screens, all this kind of stuff. But Kate has never had a screen, or anything I would really count as a screen, that was specifically hers. So we started navigating that. Like, you can do homework on the computer, and it's necessary for her to have the computer. But at the same time, when she's not doing homework, what's happening there? And so we're kind of, Danielle and I were setting rules, you know, like no screens in her bedroom. You know, if you're charging it overnight, it's in like a public area, all that kind of stuff. Screen needs to be off. But even with us talking through the rules, there's been a larger conversation with Kate. And what I find that the conversation keeps coming back to with Kate is not even about the screen. It's more about the kind of life Kate wants, which sounds weird, like I'm talking to a 11-year-old about the life she wants. But I'm like, Kate, you've met teenagers. Now, as an aside, Kate doesn't actually like teenagers at all. She's on a swim team, and there are some teenagers on it, and she thinks teenagers are like super boring, because if you start talking to a teenager at some point within the next couple minutes, they'll pull their phone out and start looking at their phone. And so Kate has always, from, you know, over the last few years, she just doesn't love teenagers because she thinks they're like, they don't do anything, they just stare at a box. I'm like, well, you're going to be a teenager soon, which she's rejecting on principle. But like, what do you want to be like? Like, when somebody comes and talks to you and you're older, like, what is your life and what's its relationship with screens, you know? And so we're kind of talking about that and having conversations, and she's actually thinking about that because she doesn't want to be like a boring person who only looks at a screen all day. This is 11-year-old version. We'll see what 15-year-old version looks like. But like, I don't want it to just be, here are rules, like, these are the things you can and cannot do with this laptop. And I'm sure all of you had similar discussions at times with your parents. But I want it to be a larger discussion of, hey, Kate, you have this life. You know, you have one life. This is the life you're going to have. And ultimately, it's not going to be me deciding your life. It's you deciding your life. God gave me a life, and I kind of have made the choices I made, but what are the choices you actually want to make before you just decide, hey, you know, I have this computer here and Subway Surfers is a game and I'm just gonna, you know, like, waste hours on this. And as I've started talking to her about this, I realized these are kind of like the things I kind of think about. And these are also the things, now I'm about to tell a Father Time story, but these are the things I thought about in college as well, because I didn't have a laptop until I was in college, like freshman year of college. And that's the first time that I really had to decide, you know, am I going to go hang out with people or am I going to sit on the internet? It's also the first time college was the first time that, you know, I really had the freedom to kind of do whatever I wanted without my parents, like, being there all the time. Like, if I wanted to go to class, I'd go to class. If I didn't want to go to class, like, it's not like, you know, now I drop Kate off at a street that's not her own. You know, she can go out to class or she can wander Dallas, I guess. But then, you know, they're going to look for her. College, like, she can wander Dallas all she wants when she gets into college, you know. And so these are kind of the start of, I'm starting to see with her this transition into almost not adulthood, but it's starting the question of, hey, what kind of life do you want? And what we're trying to do on Wednesdays, other than play games and have fun, is also, we want Wednesdays to be a time that's that when we're talking about the Bible, we're teaching, we're going to try to address the things that we find that students ask us about. Like, there's actually like a Wednesdays committee, and on the Wednesdays committee is myself and Dr. Moore and Dr. Spring. But we also, you know, talk to other professors as well, and we know the kinds of things y'all ask in class, and then we say, well, this class is not really about that, you know? And we know the kinds of things when we go to lunch that we end up talking about, and we know, you know, if I'm counseling some BACM student on courses to take, like, there's what course do you need to graduate, and there's larger, what courses do you need to become the kind of person you want to become going forward? Like, how does this shape you? So we're going to try to pick topics over the semester, next semester, and we're going to group these into series of topics. So the first series we're really going to talk about, starting today and going through the end of September, is this question of how do you build the life you want? And the topic, I think, isn't like the best class topic. Like if we had a class, we could probably make a class like this, but it's not really like a class we have. Like all of our classes kind of build into this, but there's not just like one class. And it's also not something we can address like hyper specifically. Like you can come talk to one of us one-on-one about your specific question. But I think we want to talk more for this week and then into September, more about what are kind of the common components we have to think about. Like if you got a computer for the first time and we're having a conversation about how do you build the life you actually want so that you're choosing your life rather than your life just kind of happens based on, you know, killing time or something. How do we end up choosing that life, especially when there's all kinds of noise around us and things are happening, and it's so easy to get pulled in a direction we didn't initially choose. So that's what we're talking about. Now, in 2 weeks, next week is going to be the Israel trip report, which is going to be great. I'm super excited to hear how that trip went. The week after that, Dr. Moore is going to speak on something that's going to be related, and we'll talk about that kind of at the end. Then Dr. Spring and then Dr. Brown, that's kind of our speaker lineup. And all of it is going to be focused on how do you create the life you want to create. Today I'm going to talk more about, well, to begin with, what is the life you actually want? Like how do you figure out what life is and what it is you want to be kind of going forward? And so we're going to, if you have a Bible or a screen, you can turn to Luke. We're going to be in chapter 10 today. And what we're going to look at is a passage, and on the surface, it's not going to seem like it addresses like a huge life issue, but there's going to be something important in what Jesus says right at the end. That this kind of the starting point I find myself coming back to again and again, talking to Kate, or even in my own life, I see this a lot, where I kind of gravitate back to this passage. Now, this passage is going to be kind of a famous passage on some level to you if you've been around church at all. It may even be if you've just been a Criswell student, because I was told the other day that Dr. Worthington used this for like the Timothy scholarship or whatever. And then if you're in marginalized people, we talked about this in class the other day, but this is going to be the Mary and Martha story. Now, a lot of times when you hear the Mary and Martha story, like it's in the context of like, it might be gender roles, or sometimes people want to make a contrast between like an active life and kind of more of a contemplative life, like the life of a scholar or something. I don't think that's actually what the text was designed to get at initially. It's going to have a lot more to do with if you want to build a life, how do you make sure that life doesn't pull you off of what you're actually trying to do? So we'll pick up here in verse 38, and we're going to read verse 38 and 39, which is going to give you kind of the setting and the context of the story. It says, "Now as they here as the disciples, went on their way, he, Jesus, entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him. She had a sister named Mary who sat at Jesus' feet and listened to what he was saying." And I'm going to point out a few things, although this isn't going to be as important as what comes afterwards. First, it says they went on their way. And this is important for Luke because this is a part of Luke where Jesus is going to the cross intentionally. Jesus doesn't get pulled away from the cross. Jesus is choosing himself. The life he is choosing is a life going to the cross. And starting in chapter 9, we see Jesus start to go to the cross. And so this is just reminding us he's on his way. They are on their way following him ultimately to the cross. He's turned his face to Jerusalem. That's where he's going. However, this section is not chronological, or at least I'm guessing it's not, because if it's chronological, Jesus has really gotten himself lost on the way to Jerusalem, because he's almost to Jerusalem now. It's like one chapter later. In a few more chapters, he's going to be back up in Galilee again. And so it's not that on this journey, they're giving you a daily log of where Jesus is exactly. He's almost there. It's rather, these are the things that happened as they are going to Jerusalem, and they're grouped together thematically. Like there's a reason for the order, but it's not chronology. It's more theme or topic. And we see that over this time, because Jesus knows where he's going, he's choosing the life he wants, He's trying to prepare the disciples for a time he won't be there, just like any parent tries to prepare their kid for a time they won't be there. And so Jesus, in a way, is doing this kind of thing where he's trying to prepare the disciples and his followers for what life looks like when he's not physically with them on earth. How do they choose the life they want? The other thing I'll point out is that the main character in this story is going to be Martha. We often talk about Mary and Martha, but it's actually Martha. Mary never says anything in the entire story. Martha's the one that is introduced first. And notice that Martha's the one, it says Martha welcomed him, and you might think that means like she opened the door, which she probably did. But this word means more. It's like she's the hostess here. Like it's officially kind of her gig here. It's also interesting. There's nobody that's mentioned in this passage other than Mary, Martha, and Jesus, other than the disciples are following him. But once we actually get to the story itself, there's no mention of the disciples. There's also no mention of Lazarus. We know Mary and Martha had a brother, Lazarus. We know that more from John, though. We don't see him at all in Luke or in the story. And so this is also important to understand, because a lot of times we kind of contrast Mary and Martha, because Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet and listening, and that's not like a traditionally expected gender role for that time, which is true. It isn't. You wouldn't expect a woman to take a position as a disciple, like listening to a teacher at his feet. That is a true statement. The thing is, though, then we sometimes contrast that with Martha, but Martha's also doing something that wouldn't have been expected. It wasn't expected at that time for a woman to directly host a man without other people around. For one, if you invited someone over for dinner, it would be usually the husband or the man of the house who would be the host rather than having a hostess. Now, we never know if Mary and Martha are married or not. There's no indication in any of the passages that they are. It's kind of beside the point. But even at the time, you would expect like a servant or someone else. So it's not that Martha isn't willing to kind of do unusual things for Jesus and Mary is. They both are. It's that Martha is trying to serve the Lord, very literally. She's trying to serve him food. She's trying to have Jesus over. And is this a good thing or a bad thing? Like if Jesus was on earth today and he was willing to have dinner with you at your house, wouldn't you, or your dorm room or wherever, wouldn't you get him food? Right? I mean, my guess is Cy would split the taco joint with Jesus, you know? Like, maybe not for the rest of us, but if it was Jesus, like you get him some food. This is what Martha's trying to do, and it's a good thing. But this good thing is going to become a less good thing because it's going to pull her off of what she's trying to do overall. So we'll move on to verse 40. Verse 40 introduces the problem. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks. So she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." And so you see this word here, it introduces the problem. The problem is not, it makes it clear, the problem is not that Martha is having Jesus over for dinner. It's not that Martha is preparing a meal for Jesus in any way. Those are good things. It's specifically that Martha was distracted by her many tasks. It's not even her many tasks. The many tasks in this situation are good tasks. It's that she has become distracted. Now, this word here is interesting because it's the only time this particular word is used in the Greek New Testament. And there are other words for distraction. This particular one gets at the meaning of being pulled away from someone. Or it's kind of like in your life when you have so much going on and you feel like you're being pulled in different directions. This is what has happened to Martha. Martha wants to serve the Lord. But in serving the Lord, Martha has started to feel like this is less of serving the Lord and more she has all these tasks that she needs to do, and she's being pulled in a lot of different directions. And so she sees her problem, but when she sees her problem, it's something different. We'll see what she says her problem is. But the narrator's telling you the actual problem here is Martha, in wanting to serve the Lord, in choosing to live this particular life, again, this is an unusual life for her gender in this particular context, she has let that start to pull her away in different ways and kind of distract her from the life she wants. Now, she sees her problem a little differently. She says, "Lord, Do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me. So she thinks that the problem is not she has all this to do and she's being pulled in different ways. Her problem is that Mary is not helping her because Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet listening to his teaching and she needs help. And so Mary should be helping Jesus or helping Martha serve Jesus. And here's Mary. This is what she thinks the problem is. But that's not all that she thinks the problem is. It's also, Lord, what does she say? Do you not care? She also thinks part of her problem is Jesus doesn't even care. Like, Jesus is too nice because we've seen Jesus. You know, he has like the flowing hair. He's newly showered. He's got the blue eyes. He's got the halo. And he's not going to tell Mary, listen, you need to go help your sister. He's just going to kind of go along, you know? So, Jesus, do you not care that my sister, and so whose fault is it according to Martha? It's everybody's fault but Martha's. It's Jesus' fault, it's Mary's fault, she has this, but we have these two different perspectives. The narrator is telling you that the problem is in trying to serve Jesus and go for this life, she's actually been pulled away from the life she actually wants, what she actually wanted to have happen, which is to spend time with Jesus because she's working so hard and being pulled away on all these tasks. Mary, on the other hand, has made a different choice, and she, Martha, thinks that Jesus should tell Mary to help her out. Please, I could use some help, Jesus. I also like to, just as an aside, how she addresses him as Lord and then proceeds to tell him exactly what to do, right? Tell my sister to help me, Jesus. I mean, is that not a prayer life right there? Dear Lord, get this person to stop messing with me, you know, like, dear Lord. Is it not their fault? Now, Jesus is going to respond, but I want you to notice something before I even read it. The story ends at the end of the quotation. Whenever the story ends at the end of the quotation with Jesus, whatever he said was the point. Notice that there's no need to tell you how the rest of the story ends. The point of the story is the last thing he said. So this is going to be the way Jesus looks at the problem and what he thinks Martha should do about this. Jesus says, Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things, but few things are needed. Indeed, only one. Mary has chosen the better part, your translation may say portion there, which will not be taken away from her. So we see Jesus, anytime Jesus repeats a name, Martha, Martha, that kind of stuff, it shows Jesus' compassion. Like, Martha's coming up here. She's clearly harried. She is trying to serve Jesus, but she's like blaming Jesus and Mary for her condition. But Jesus still cares about how she's doing. Like, this is his relationship with her. But he tells her what the problem is here. He says, you are worried and distracted by many things. The word worry here is actually repeated in the Greek. It's like you are worried about many worries. It's like a way to really emphasize you're super, super stressed out here. But you are worried about what? You're worried by many things. You're worried by many things. But few things are needed, indeed only one. See, this is what Jesus' point is. She is worried by many things. Can you say many things? But there is one thing that is necessary. Can you say one thing? And what's happened is, the one thing that is necessary for the life she wants, she's been pulled away from by many things. And in this case, the many things are even many good things. It's not like many bad things have pulled her away. I mean, that's a possibility. But the reason Jesus is compassionate here is because she's been pulled away by many good things. She's serving the Lord, but she's been pulled away from the one thing that is necessary. Then he goes on and says, Mary has chosen the better portion. And so this is kind of a imagery or a play on words here. He uses the word for like a meal. It's almost like, so when Cy goes to taco joint, you know, he goes up, probably Susan is checking him out, and he tries to figure out what he wants. Today is Wednesday, amen? And so he's going to go with the Wednesday special because you can only get that for Wednesday, and that's the sour cream chicken enchiladas. And so he asks her for the Wednesday special because who wouldn't? And she brings him eventually or calls him up, and he grabs the Wednesday special and he sits down. Why? Because he chose the Wednesday special. And so he sits down and he starts eating his food. Well, here's what Susan's not going to do. She's not going to take his food back up mid-bite. He's chosen that. What Jesus is saying here to Martha is Mary has made a choice. She's looked at the menu of all the things she can do, and she had a choice with how to spend her life. And what she has chosen is the best thing on the menu. And once she's chosen the best thing on the menu, Jesus isn't going to come and take the food up. Now, two things about this. Number one, and this is kind of the point. Who chose this for Mary in the way he's wording this? She did. Some of you sometimes, I'll get these students, this might not be you, but I get these students sometimes, especially with the BACM stuff, and they worry about calling, like if they are called or what. Guys, you can volunteer. Like, that's a possibility. Like, if you want to serve the Lord, but you need him to do, like, Mary is choosing. And also, Mary is choosing. I don't really want to go down the gender role, but side here, but she has made the choice. If you want to serve the Lord, you can serve the Lord. The Lord has given you a life, and you can choose how to use the life. It's not on him. It's not on everybody else. You can't blame your life on Jesus or Mary. You have a choice, Martha. How do you want to choose? And this is the question we all always have, whether we're student, staff, faculty, whatever. We have a choice right now to how to live our lives, and Jesus has given us that choice. And the other thing is, it will not be taken away. Now, in this imagery, she's made the choice. She's looked at the menu. She has chosen what she wants. Who is in this? Who is the Susan character? Like, who is bringing the food to Mary that she chose? Jesus, in the way he's saying here. Like, Mary sat down and chose to listen to Jesus, and it was given. In this, Jesus is bringing the food to Mary. And the implication for Martha is, because this is, you know, this is her language, she understands what he's saying. The implication for Martha is, who is serving whom? See, it's real easy for us to think we want to serve the Lord, and that's great. I said this was grouped thematically right before this is the Good Samaritan. This is not, we should all just like isolate from the world, never do anything, just me and Jesus in my quiet time. That's not the point. The point is, though, if we go trying to serve the Lord in all things, eventually we'll end up without any food because it's not us serving the Lord. The best life is always the Lord serving us. And then once the Lord has served us, we have something left over to go take to other people. And see, this is the trick with picking the life you want. We all have a choice, whether you're a student, whether you're faculty, whether you're staff, you know, however old you are, we have life right now. And today, we choose the life we want. And there are many things we can do. That's part of college. You have more things you can do right now than you've ever had in your life. There are many things you can do. And a lot of those are really good things. I could sit up here and tell you, don't do the bad things. Don't do the bad things, you guys. It's the good things that pull you away from the best thing. The question we all have to answer is, what is the necessary thing? What's the necessary thing? And the way Mary answered that was to sit at the feet of Jesus while he was there and then go and share with others when he wasn't there. And for all of us, if the life you want is a life that involves, on some level, whether professionally or volunteer or whatever, serving the Lord, you're not going to be able to serve the Lord continuously unless the Lord serves you first and foremost. That is how to get the life we want. Okay, instead of a Q&A that's more interview style, what we've decided to do is to invite up multiple people and have more of a conversation. So I'm going to invite up Dr. Kieser, Dr. Moore, and Dr. Spring. While they're coming up, there was a student the other day that had mentioned that she would pay money, or somebody had said she would pay money to hear like some of us like having conversations. Well, here you go. You don't have to pay because that's the beauty of Wednesday. You've already had your cover charge and whatever this thing is. Like, we're just going to have a conversation about how this has looked, what this has looked like in our life. And I'll open this up. And if you have a question, just like flag us down and we can enter that in. But I'm going to start off myself just with, I'm actually really interested, Ty, with you, because I feel like of all of us, you actually probably get the most stuff done. Like, I'm always very impressed about how much you get done in a semester. And so I'm curious about...
See, I told you, 8 o'clock class. We just talked about this. Yes?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all agree on this. Like, we're all kind of like, what else is he going to do? It kind of like embarrasses us all. How do you choose what you do and what you don't do? Like, what is your goal overall? Like, you know, I don't know, for this semester.
Number one, that's an illusion. Like, I've hand waved and created this illusion that I get things done. So apparently just look busy is the solution. I think one thing that I do that is not unique to me, but that I think is very valuable to my life, which is every year I start off the year with a 30, 20, 15, 5, 12 month, 6 month, 1 month list of goals.
What?
And yeah.
One of the reasons I wanted more people is there'll be other opinions on this.
I'm not even sure what he said.
So I have a list of goals that are ranked like 30 years from now, this is what I want to have done. And
you have a list of 30-year goals.
Yeah. Every year I do it again. I do it every year. It takes like 6 minutes, guys. You all could do it right now before we're done talking.
Okay. I've never felt
Sarah,
more validated.
Sarah, start now.
Okay. 6 minutes.
So, but what it does is it sort of, and it's not always task. Like it's also like characteristics, virtues, relational goals. So it's not always professional. It's not just professional either. So it's like I have categories of familial, relational, ministerial, etc. And it means I have to think through, okay, if I want to get this done in 30 years, I have to do this in 20 years, which means I have to do this in 15 years, which means I have to do this in 10 years. And it means like it sounds outlandish, but because I have 30-year goals, I actually have made different decisions on what I do in January. And the options for the 30 years are all good things, right? And the options for, not all good things, many good things, right? The options in January are also, there's a lot of good things, but it's recognizing sort of the way we use it in education is start with the end in mind, right? Think about the end and orient the rest of it toward that. So that's one thing, one answer.
How do you figure out like the end goal then? Because I think that's what we all kind of wrestle with at times. Or has that changed? Have you seen that change? How long have you been doing this, and has that changed over time, like what the goals actually are?
They've gotten increasingly more virtue-centered and less task-centered.
Interesting. Do you have an example of that?
So the First Thessalonians 4, probably 3 or 4 years ago, became a text that's just sort of like slapped me in the face, which is make it your ambition to live a quiet life, to work with your hands, to mind your business and work with your hands. And I didn't and am tempted to not want to live a quiet life. Like I have this sort of desire to sort of like be influential or on my worst days, like be famous, be known, right, for something. And if I'm making it my ambition to live a quiet life, then who I end up being in 30 years is oriented more around wisdom. It's oriented more around like compassion and charity than it is around accomplishing something. And so my 30-year goals have become less kind of like write these books and more like become the kind of person who is known for their wisdom and patience, that kind of thing.
I think we could all go home now.
And make our 30-year, 15-year goals.
I think one of the challenges for me, though, is whenever I've done goal planning like that, like on the big picture things, yes, but like I'm so terrible at predicting like what's going to happen 5 weeks from now. Like I'm consistently wrong. Kind of famously, I was on a mission trip in February of 2020, and one of the people on the mission trip asked me if I'd read anything, because she knows I read the news, about some disease that's out in China. I was like, yeah, it sounds like a big deal. They're like shutting China down, but how would that ever happen in America? It took 3 weeks, you know? And so part of mine too is like how closely I'm planning. It's more, I feel like over time I've become more and more present oriented. Like, it kind of goes back to the Good Samaritan. Like, I feel like on some level, one of the reasons that the priest and the Levite passes by is because they have somewhere to be. And I kind of want to not have places to be, you know, too. Like, I don't want to feel like I have to be somewhere in 15 years, you know? So, and that's not to, it's just a different perspective. Like, it's interesting hearing yours as well.
Yeah, but I think that's, is this thing still on? I just feel like a buzzing. I think mm-hmm. that's the great thing about your, like, how you've kind of shifted to focusing mm-hmm. on, like, virtues instead of tasks. I mm-hmm. mean, that then kind of helps you be in the present, too, because in the present, then you're, mm-hmm. Looking what's in front of you and how do I develop these like long-term virtues that I want to develop in my life instead of a task, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Sarah, how's your life? Because obviously, like, we're... I wasn't a joke. I'm sincerely interested in your life because as opposed to us, like, you know, I'm a little more meandering than the two of them are, but you teach English, and obviously you have found yourselves in a lot of...
Don't read the Bible, yes.
Yeah, you found yourself in different institutions, you know, and you do want to serve the Lord. I mean, that's why you're here. Like, there are better places to teach English, probably, but you're trying to serve the Lord here, and we're happy you're here. How did that kind of process go where you decided, yes, I will, you know, teach at, you know, somewhere like Criswell or a seminary or wherever?
I have ended up, I think, being more along the Dr. Sanders line because I was a tenure track English professor at a state institution, started my career there, spent 4 years there. And really, if I had made those goals, I would have had my entire career there. And then got a phone call and was not expecting it of a person I used to know, I was actually in church with when I was in graduate school, Googled me to find me and said, I'm now the dean of the college at Southwestern, can we have a conversation? And that was not on my bingo card at all. Mm-hmm. And he called me on a Wednesday in February and said, is there any chance you're going to be in Texas? And what he did not know is that I had bought a plane ticket months earlier and I was going to be in Texas in less than 12 hours. And so I was like, okay, God, I'm not sure what's happening. What's going on here? And so absolutely that would never have had that be a goal. And in fact, everybody thought I was absolutely insane mm-hmm. for quitting that tenure track position at a state institution to go to an institution with nobody had ever heard of mm-hmm. and a seminary that they're like, they have English at a seminary. So yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now I think
we didn't have English in my undergrad.
Oh, yes, Georgia Tech, yes. Mm-hmm. All engineering all the time.
Uh-huh, there you go.
I should say I paid my way through graduate school, though, editing the documents of the engineers. So I think there is
where the money is right there, you guys.
It's true. Mm-hmm. But yes, yeah, so yeah. I do think every plan that I've ever had has been wrong. Mm-hmm. I told God I was going to be a physical therapist. That didn't happen. I told God I was not going to teach.
Why weren't you a physical therapist? What happened there?
Wound debridement.
Oh.
See?
What did that involve for you?
So my parents are in the medical field. It made sense for me to go that way. And I actually do love science, formulas. I love mm-hmm. things working out. It's ironic now that I am in the gray area. But yes, I was shadowing, interning at my dad's hospital. And of my first... a encounter with this. We walk into a room. There is a convict shackled to a police officer who is in the whirlpool because they're about to do physical therapy with this convict. And he is severely diabetic, which I did not know. So that's why he's in the whirlpool, is to loosen the skin. And then they bring him up out of the water. And it was like a slow motion for me going, what am I about to see? And then I was like, yeah, okay, no, we're done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a longer story there about an amazing professor that I just loved the way he taught as a professor, and he read a poem, a Russian poem, and that poem, I remember thinking, this is it. So, but yes, every plan I've ever made has been wrong. And I told some of my students in the 12-15, I also thought I would be married with four boys, blonde hair, blue-eyed boys, at mm-hmm. this particular point. So I've really been wrong, like, all the way across.
Did you just date blondes then? Like genetically, don't you? Like, how does that work?
I should mention that was more of a childhood dream. Once I realized how DNA works, then that was, we adjusted. But
I guess that's the engineer perspective in me.
Yes.
Terry, you did your undergraduate degree in chemistry. How did you end up finding the New Testament?
That's a really good question. I actually did my undergrad in chemistry and was headed to medical school, and my last semester of my senior year of college was praying about where my life was headed, and had lots of, like you said today, had lots of options in front of me. And I know we're kind of running out of time, but I had a really kind of religious, spiritual experience with Jesus about the direction of my life, and was like, I think maybe I'm gonna go to seminary. Yeah. I really had no idea what seminary was or what the options were. And I went to one seminary in the Metroplex for about a semester and a half and studied the Bible, and thought, why would I study the Bible without being able to read it in its original language? And then I went to another seminary in the Metroplex, Dallas Seminary, and went to one Greek class, like literally the first class, and fell in love with the New Testament and was like, this is it. This is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. It was, nothing rational about it. Mm-hmm. Just a very deep love for the New Testament.
So it sounds like for all of us, to some degree, like what we're trying to do, at least externally, kind of, the image of it has shifted since we were in college.
Yeah.
But there are probably some like central issues of who we became in college that have carried along as well. Yeah. I think sometimes with students it can be like, we feel like we want to answer these questions like, what are you going to do, you know, when you grow up, or what are you going to do next? And it's like, those are kind of temporary steps along, but there's like whatever the essential is. Okay, well, that's Wednesday for today. So next Wednesday, we will have the Israel trip. In two Wednesdays, Dr. Moore will talk about boundaries and the ability to say no, because if you're going to have the life you want, occasionally you have to say no to things. And
you're going to want to be here for this. Say yes in just this one instance.
And then the week after that, Dr. Spring will be talking about grit and how to pick yourself up when life kicks you down, because if you stay down, you won't have the life you want. And then the week after that, Dr. Brown is going to actually practically talk about screens and research and like how social media and I don't know, who knows what she'll talk about, but it has to do with that area of how to live your life nowadays with like constant distractions. Okay, you were dismissed. See you in 7 days.